There was a portly innkeeper behind a bar, and three men in muddy work clothes at one of the tables. All four of them stared at the newly arrived couple. Waldo cast his eyes about.
"Are you looking for something?" Alice asked.
"I thought all the inns in this country had women with revealing clothes." Alice blushed slightly.
"We won't ever be visiting a place like that, and please don't ever mention it again."
"Why not?"
"There are just certain things best left in the past."
"You mean like how your breasts are not the equal of my mother's?"
Alice sent him a look of complete disbelief. He could sense a spark of anger rising in her through their connection.
"Can I help you, sir?"
the innkeeper asked cautiously from behind his bar.
"My correct title is Master, not Sir." The innkeeper raised an eyebrow.
"Please ignore him," Alice said. "He wants everyone to call him that."
Waldo shot her an annoyed glance.
"I don't suppose you have wine here by any chance, do you?"
"We have ale," the man answered.
Waldo made a face. One more hardship.
"We'll have some then, and a meal."
"We have mutton and potatoes and wheat bread."
"That will be fine," Waldo said and sat down at an empty table. Alice sat down beside him as the innkeeper went to the back to tell someone to ready the food, before filling two large tankards with a foaming brown liquid. As this was going on, Alice glanced over at the table where the three men were staring.
"Looks like I won't have to worry about being hungry later."
"That's nice," Waldo said absently. He stared down at his drink. The color reminded him of muddy water, and it had a weedy smell to it.
"Could you at least pretend to be upset that there are men lusting after me?
That would be like being upset about a wolf wanting to devour a lamb. A sensible person should accept the natural order of things."
"Well, it's natural for a husband to be jealous when strangers are eyeing his wife."
"Shouldn't I take that as a compliment? It's not as though I would be upset if people admired the horse I was riding."
"Now you're comparing me to a horse?"
"It's just an example. Obviously you're worth a lot more to me than any horse."
Alice sat there and just stared at him.
"You're planning to kick me, aren't you?"
"I am thinking about it."
Waldo frowned at her.
"Do you want me to kill them for looking at you?"
"Who said anything about killing them?"
"Well, that's a relief. I would have had to use you for that. Killing people for me is part of your duties as my familiar."
"Wife, darling, I'm not asking you to murder anyone. I don't even expect you to beat them up."
"Glad to hear that."
"I just want you to be jealous."
"So you want me to be jealous, but not to actually do anything about it?"
"Yes."
"Well, that's pointless. It's like being thirsty but not trying to take a drink."
"It's not about doing anything, it's about showing that you care."
"By feeling jealousy?"
"Yes. Isn't the fact I bought you proof of that? I'm going to kick you now."
A few minutes later, the innkeeper came to their table with two plates filled with hot food.
"Is there anything I can help you with, sir?"
"Can you tell me where to find Roger the Hedge Wizard?"
"Why?"
"My reasons are none of your business. Do you know where he is or not?"
Alice saw the man stiffen.
Whack!
Ow!
Waldo began rubbing one of his shins.
"You kicked me!"
"Did I?"
Alice asked sweetly. "Must have been an accident."
She sent the innkeeper an indulgent smile.
"Please forgive my husband's rudeness. There is an important matter we need to meet with Master Roger over. It would be a huge help if you could tell us how to find him."
She looked intently into his eyes. The man's cheeks turned cranberry red and he tried to suck in his gut.
"He lives in the woods a quarter mile west of the village. There's a little path that will take you straight to his door, so you should be able to find it. I can tell you, though, that he won't go with you. The other two didn't have any luck, and you won't either."
"Other two?"
Waldo asked as he rubbed his bruised ankle.
"I always heard you white mages knew what all your sort were about. Two others came to visit him. Last one was a couple years ago, I think. They wanted to invite him to Avalon, but he turned them down. Roger is one of us, and is not one for putting on white."
Waldo smiled triumphantly at Alice.
"See, I told you they weren't to be trusted."
"They?"
the innkeeper asked.
"The other white mages," Alice said quickly before Waldo could answer. "There are different groups and,
factions," Waldo provided, seeing what she was doing.
"We have different philosophies on how to achieve our ultimate goal."
Smiling, he lowered his voice conspiratorially.
"We're trying to conquer the world, you know. You shouldn't trust any of us."
"As you say, sir,"
the man replied nervously and scuttled back to his bar.
"Why did you say that?" Alice whispered. "That's only going to cause trouble for us." That's fine, so long as it causes trouble for Avalon, too.
I intend to make the name Waldo Rabbit feared throughout the land by the time I'm done.
Are you going to do this by spreading rumors in bars?
Waldo shrugged. We all have to start somewhere.
With a shake of her head, the two of them began to eat.
Chapter 22. Roger, the Hedge Wizard.
Will you look at the tits on her?
Edwin said quietly.
He and his two friends were at the inn, having a few tankards of ale when a white wizard and his woman came in. They had made a bit of the scene, but were now just eating. The three men had trouble taking their eyes off her.
Ought to be careful, Marcus said. I heard her say she was his wife. Don't want to mess with none of them sort.
Roger's not so bad, Edwin pointed out.
He's a local sort, not one of them white ones, Marcus said. Them sort is wise and quick to anger.
I want to grab them tates, their friend Joster slurred.
He'd already downed four tankards of ale, and his eyes were swimming. He was a big man and used to getting his way.
Go ahead, then. I dare you, Edwin said.
Oh, no,
Marcus said softly.
You dare me, fucker.
Joster got up on unsteady legs.
I'll show you.
He began to stumble towards the table where the white mage and his woman were seated.
This is a bad idea, Marcus said.
Joster paid no attention, though, and Edwin was clearly anticipating what was about to happen. The couple didn't notice Joster's lumbering approach until he leaned over and clamped down both hands on the girl's shoulder. Her reaction was immediate.
Eek!
She yelled at the top of her lungs and smashed a fist into his chin. Marcus and Edwin watched as their beefy friend was launched off his feet and into the air to land in an unconscious heap.
She took him down in one punch, Edwin said, disbelieving. Now that be a healthy gal,
Marcus sounded impressed. The wizard was still seated with a fork full of food halfway to his mouth. He lifted a hand in the direction of the innkeeper.
We'll be going now.
The two of them were headed out of the village in the direction where the local magic user, Roger, was supposed to reside.
Did you really have to hit him that hard? Waldo asked.
They'd been forced to shovel the rest of their meal down and quickly leave. While Waldo was all for committing crimes to build his reputation, he would rather do so without inciting another mob.
He grabbed me.
I know, but couldn't you have been just a bit more reserved?
How would you like it if some fat, hairy oaf suddenly grabbed you?
Alice demanded.
I wouldn't.
Well, unless he was a masseuse. Alice sent him an ugly glare.
The point is, you don't need to go that far. You are a succubus. Even in this form, you are a lot stronger than an ordinary human being.
I can't help it. I've always been that way when men tried to touch me. As soon as my body started to develop, Elsa tried to make me one of her girls. When a customer would start to touch me, my instinct was to beat him off.
That's not normal for a succubus.
Well, pardon me for not wanting to be molested. I grew up seeing men as beasts, and I didn't want any of them doing those sorts of things to me.
You didn't react that way when we first met.
Alice's face blushed slightly.
Well, of course not, darling. You were my savior, and you wanted to marry me. I'm fine with you touching me. It's just all the other men in the world I can't stand.
I feel honored. You mean to say, whenever a man touches you, this is how you react? A woman has a right to defend herself.
How did you manage working where you were, then?
Everyone who worked there was a woman. The regulars knew better than to grab. Occasionally there'd be a customer who would grope me, but he never did it more than once. Elsa always threatened to whip me for causing trouble, but the men all still liked me.
Makes a certain amount of sense. We always want what we can't have.
They had no real trouble finding the path that led to the hedge wizard's home. It soon took them to a plain cottage with an expansive garden near the edge of the village.
This must be where Roger lives, Alice said.
It is, Waldo said with certainty, as his eyes glanced about.
Something wrong, darling?
I can sense him inside. All magic users can sense each other. That means he can sense me as well. He should have come out to greet me.
I'm sure that's...
She was cut off by a monstrous roar. Out of the forest, a massive green lizard at least 30 feet long and 15 feet high came stampeding. Black smoke puffed from its nostrils. It bore a mouthful of foot-long, sharpened teeth, and it snapped its tail around furiously.
Is that a dragon?
Alice immediately jumped in front of Waldo to place her body between him and the monster.
It certainly looks like one, he replied calmly. Run, darling. I'll protect you.
She was about to transform.
It's all right.
Discoros.
Waldo spoke a single word of magic and made a sign with two fingers of his left hand. Immediately, the giant lizard's form began to blur. Its roar was muted, and as it continued to charge, it grew more and more indistinct. Then it was gone. Alice stood there gaping at the suddenly empty wood.
"Damn it! I was hoping that would scare you off."
Out of the building stepped a balding, middle-aged man with a wide gait. He was dressed in dirty trousers and an overshirt that was half tucked in. The hedge wizard Roger, I presume? Seeing his appearance made Waldo's opinion of him drop even further. A dragon? Why not something more subtle, like a giant or an army of goblins?
"It worked on a bunch of bandits," the balding man said with a frown. "Hedge wizard? There's no need to be rude, you know. Just because I'm not from Avalon doesn't make me less of a magic user than you."
"Sorry, I'm a white mage, so I always think I'm better than everyone else." Roger grunted.
"First time I've ever heard one of your kind admit to that."
Excuse me? Alice waved her hand to get their attention. "What happened to the dragon?" "I dispelled it," Waldo said. "What does that mean?" Roger gave her his full attention. His eyes slid up and down her figure, and then halted on her chest.
"The dragon was an illusion. I was hoping to scare you off. Of course, that was before I got a good look at you. I am Roger the Magnificent. What is your name, lovely lady?"
She crossed her arms and made a point to stand behind Waldo.
"My name is Alice Rabbit, and this is my husband, Waldo Rabbit."
"Husband?"
He spared Waldo an envious glance.
"You are a lucky man."
"I know, being a white mage." Roger raised a perplexed eyebrow while Alice shook her head.
"Well, since you're both here, why don't you come inside?"
The inside of Roger's home was no more impressive than the outside. There was a fire pit for warmth and cooking. There was a rickety table with four stools and a pile of furs that served as a bed. The floor was dirt, with some straw scattered on top of it.
"The slaves in Castle Corpse Lover live better than this." When the three of them sat down about the table, Roger sat as close to Alice as he could. He kept openly staring at her chest.
"Your illusion was quite good," Waldo said.
"Not good enough, obviously. How did you know it was an illusion?"
"It was a dragon." Roger gave another sour grunt.
"Do you even know how to talk to someone without insulting them?"
"No, comes from being a white mage. By the way, do you know we're plotting to take over the world?" Alice shook her head.
"You're a lot more direct than the other whites I've met. So is this where you start in about unity, justice, and peace?"
"Do you want me to?" Roger narrowed his eyes.
"I've met two white mages before, and they both tried to convince me to go to Avalon and study with them. All they would talk about was unity, justice, and peace. They went on and on about how wonderful the world would be one day, once everyone was on their side. No more war, no more poverty or crime. Get rid of all the monsters and all the dark mages, and everything wrong with the world will be fixed."
"Why do you have to get rid of all the monsters?" Alice demanded.
Roger looked at her in surprise.
"You're married to a white mage. Hasn't he explained their philosophy to you?"
"I've tried, but she is not very smart. Honestly, I just keep her around to warm my bed." Thump. Waldo managed to not shout in pain as he was kicked beneath the table. Not noticing, Roger nodded.
"Lucky man."
"Yes, that's me. I'm drowning in luck." Waldo tried to rub his shin without making it too obvious.
"If you've come here to try and recruit me, the answer is still no. I'm happy right here."
"Really?" Waldo pointedly looked around the cramped, dirty interior. "You obviously have some skill. Why not find yourself a patron who can properly reward you?"
"Because this is my home, and these are the people I've grown up with. I like being able to help them. Just seeing them happy is reward enough."
"No, seriously, why do you stay here?"
"That is the reason."
"Do you rule over them and make them do your bidding?"
"Of course not. They are my neighbors, my friends. When they need my help, I am there and they pay me whatever they can. When outsiders come here, I'll charge them, but the most important thing to me is the welfare of my village."
"So, what you're saying is, you take care of these villagers without demanding anything more than the bare minimum from them in return? That you see their well-being as your true reward?"
"That's right."
Waldo sighed. "Fine, don't tell me."
"Darling, you're being rude."
"Me being rude? He's the one lying to my face and not even doing a good job of it."
"You know the other two white mages who came here were pretty haughty, but you outdo them. I swear you're almost as bad as a dark mage."
"Thank you."
Are you mocking me?
Alice saw their host was about to throw them out. Though she loathed doing it, she put a hand gently on top of one of Roger's sweaty palms and smiled sweetly at him while leaning forward just a bit to give him a better view. She was okay with touching men, so long as they did not use it as an excuse to grab onto her.
Please, sir, my husband meant no offense.
Roger's eyes darted to the top of her breasts, and he calmed noticeably.
Well, I can forgive him, lovely lady, but I'm still not going to Avalon.
That is not the reason we came here. Waldo pulled the sole bark wood and shavings from his pockets and placed them on the table in front of Roger. I'm afraid I lost my spellbook. Would you be willing to sell me a couple pages of vellum, along with a quill and some ink, so I can write down the spells I still have memorized?
You lost your spellbook? Roger asked with a chuckle. Only an incompetent would do that.
Waldo frowned.
That's as may be. Will you trade me some vellum for this soulwood?
Roger shook his head.
I have some spare vellum, but I also have plenty of soulwood, too.
All right. Will you sell it to me, then? I can pay in silver and copper.
Alice sent her husband a sharp look. They didn't have that much money, and what they had, she had earned. She was willing to spend some of it for his sake, but did not like the way he was offering to just toss it away. Later on, they would have a very long talk about bargaining and negotiating, and about just who would handle the money. It would not be him.
I don't really need coin. I have enough. Anyway, the people here supply me with the basics.
Roger said cautiously as his eyes drifted back to Alice's chest.
I might be open to trade, though.
Alice had been dealing with lonely men for years, and she immediately caught the tone of his words. She took her hand away and scooted her chair closer to Waldo.
I have nothing more valuable than the soulwood. Well, there you have it, Alice said quickly. We don't have anything else to trade. How about you sell us this stuff? I'm sure we can negotiate a fair price.
Roger swallowed and faced Waldo without meeting his eyes.
Let me have 1 hour with your wife, and I'll give you 5 pages.
Alice jumped to her feet.
That's disgusting. My husband would never agree to anything like that.
Waldo nodded and stood. Done. Have your way with her.
What?
It's just 1 hour. Is it asking that much?
Alice stood there, gaping like a fish. Enjoy yourself. Waldo gave Roger a friendly nod and exited. He waited just outside the door. It took less than half a minute.
Hick!
He heard a smack, followed by a loud thump. Waldo went back inside and was not surprised to find Roger laid out like a rug. Alice was standing there glaring at him murderously. From his connection to her, he knew she was furious.
Good,
he said cheerfully, and went over to the bed and began tossing aside furs. You search him and I'll start here. He should have a spellbook along with magical supplies, and he said he had some money, too. We need to go through every inch of this place as quick as we can.
What do you think you're doing?
I am robbing him, obviously.
I don't care about that. How could you agree? He was going to...
Waldo sighed.
Alice, I saw what happens to a man who tries to touch you. I knew what was going to transpire, and that there was no chance of anything unwanted occurring.
She blinked.
Oh, I understand. You would never actually let another man have his way with me.
Well, not for 5 sheets of vellum. He would have to pay a lot more.
What?
Waldo could feel her rage roaring to new heights. You would expect a succubus to be more open-minded.
I am kidding, of course.
You had better be,
she growled.
Now could you please search him, Alice?
We need to rob him and be long gone from this place by the time he wakes. As he searched, there was a smile on his face. The fearsome legend of Waldo Rabbit had begun. Chapter 23 Stealing for Fun and Profit. They spent about 20 minutes ransacking the place before fleeing. Waldo had insisted they head into the woods to avoid the locals and any possible pursuit Roger might send after them. Tramping through the woods, Waldo was humming what sounded like a funeral dirge.
You know, darling, I don't think I've ever seen you in such a good mood.
Well, I never knew just how much fun robbing someone could be. To emphasize the point, he held up his newly acquired spellbook.
We should definitely steal more often. I'm glad you enjoyed taking everything a man had.
Yes. It had been quite a haul. He had discovered jars filled with mandrake, wolfsbane, lotus blossoms, devil's grass, sulfur, ground obsidian, and more soulwood. With those, he could make a few potions when he had the time.
almost as valuable, he'd found glass vials with wax stoppers. "By the way, I still need you to cry."
"Not this again. I'm not going to cry just because you tell me to."
"Don't be selfish. Do you have any idea how valuable love potion is?"
"I am not crying."
Waldo stopped and thought for a moment.
"You're fat."
"What? I don't think of you as my wife. Your mother probably never loved you. I've always preferred dark-haired women." Alice stared at him. "Do you feel like crying now?"
"No, but one more word and I'll hit you."
Waldo stopped talking. He could always make her cry later. Along with the jars and vials, there had been a coin box. You would never have guessed it, but Roger had actually had a lot of money. Not a one of the coins had been gold. The vast majority were copper tracks. But there had also been silver dalters, ribs, and wolves. Alice had quickly and expertly counted and separated the coins. The secret hoard had contained 111 silver coins and 2,290 copper ones. It was the equivalent of 6 gold coins, 13 silvers and 90 coppers, 20 silver coins to 1 gold one, and 100 copper coins to 1 made of silver. Alice had then put them all in a separate purse and buried it inside her backpack. On Roger's person, they had found a wand. Waldo had seized it and made it disappear into one of his pockets. The most useful, and to Waldo the most valuable thing they had taken, was the spellbook. It was bound in sturdy brown leather, and its pages were all made of yellow vellum. More than a third of it was still blank. There had also been pens and ink. When they stopped to rest for the night, Waldo would write down all the spells he still had memorized. In the meantime, he was reading it to see what sorts of spells and formulas it had. Roger's handwriting was a bit sloppy, but not unreadable. As with most spellbooks, it contained not only enchantments, but also recipes for brewing potions. Listed were cures for minor ailments and pain relievers, a potion of disguises, and a potion of truth-telling that looked interesting. Sadly, there wasn't one for making love potion. The spells themselves were a disappointment. There was not a single offensive spell listed, nothing that would harm another person, never mind kill them or slowly drain the life from them. What self-respecting magic users went without combat spells? From what he could see, almost all of Roger's magic was based around illusion, healing, and weather control. The healing spells would be easy to memorize and might be useful. Creating illusions could come in handy as well. But weather control? How utterly worthless. Still, since this was the spellbook of a hedge wizard, he was just grateful that it contained anything at all. It would be good to get back in the habit of learning new magic. He would study all of it when he had the time, even the spells he did not ever expect to use.
"Are you really happy about it?" Alice asked.
He closed the spellbook and stopped it in order to put it in his backpack.
"About what?" "Stealing. I mean, he wasn't a very nice man, but he wasn't much worse than most of my old customers. Was it really right for us to just rob him like we did?"
"I'm not sure what you mean. He had what I wanted, so I took it from him. What could be wrong with that?"
"I mean, it's wrong to steal, especially when you take everything someone has."
"So it would have been fine to only take half?"
"Well, no. That would still be wrong, but not as bad as taking everything. I mean, don't you feel even a little bit guilty?"
Having put the spellbook away, he put the backpack on again and started walking.
"You haven't forgotten who I am because of my brilliant disguise, have you?"
"Trust me, darling, that wouldn't be possible."
"Then you should understand that this is what I am here to do. I can't go home again until I have completed all the conditions of my quest. If robbing someone helps me with that, then it's what I'll do. Besides, it's fun."
He really did look happier than she'd ever seen.
"Don't you feel even a little bad for Roger?"
"Why would I? This is what dark mages do. We take what we want. The whole point of the first quest is to prove your strength by doing whatever you please. For us, do as thou wilt is the whole of the law."
"Darling, I know what you are and what you believe. A few of the things you've told me have really worried me. But in spite of that, I've seen that you're a good man. Have you ever stopped to think that things would be better if you didn't do things like steal?"
"I have a spellbook now, along with a wand, spell components, and all the coins we found. How exactly would I be better off by not stealing?"
"All right, let me try to explain it this way. In this country, thieves get whipped and sent to work in the mines."
"Which is why we're going to avoid the roads for a while. I only intend to do things I can get away with."
"Well, that makes it all right, then."
"Exactly." The two of them were swinging wide around Bitford. Alice had found them some squirrels and they had already eaten. They were currently sitting around a fire as Waldo was writing in his new spellbook.
He'd already written down the spells and potion recipes he'd clearly remembered. He was writing a final entry under the heading, Love Potion, ? He knew he had most of the formula correct. If one or two ingredients were missing, he thought he could improvise. Even in Alteroth, Love Potion was highly sought after and extremely valuable. In a backward place like this, it would be worth even more. Once he got the key ingredient, he would definitely try and brew some. But how do I make Alice cry? So where do we go now, darling? Middleton. That's where the next part of my quest is. Waldo finished the recipe and carefully blew on what he'd written to help the ink dry. So what are you going to do there? Waldo glanced at her consideringly. He hadn't told her any of the specifics about his quest yet. Once they arrived, she would have to be told. Since there was no way to keep it secret much longer, he thought now would be a good time to tell her. Part of my quest requires that I make a contract with 3 monsters. That was the original reason why I came to Stratford and sought you out. There are 2 more powerful monsters in Lothos that I mean to find and make a contract with. What do you mean? When you say make a contract, I know you can't mean... I'm going to try and find 2 more familiars who will help me with the rest of my quest. Alice did not look happy.
You're not going to do the same thing with them that you did with me, are you?
Yes, I am. I will perform the binding ritual with each of them. I'm going to make a contract with them and make them my familiars.
You can't do that. You're not allowed to have more than 1 wife. I definitely won't share you.
Alice, I can't return home without 3 monsters bound to me. There are also other conditions to my quest. Having 3 great monsters serving me will make achieving them easier. He didn't intend to tell her about those other conditions for a while yet. Sitting next to him by the fire, Alice began to fidget just a bit.
I don't see why you need anyone else. The 2 of us have done pretty well, haven't we?
Except for almost drowning, yes.
You can't have other wives. I've already told you that the binding ritual is not a marriage ceremony, and I promise I will not give anyone any flowers this time.
Alice slowly nodded. That did help. It meant he was not going to marry these other monsters, but that didn't completely satisfy her. The truth was, Alice was really enjoying this strange new life of hers. Despite the bad moments, she found she really did care for her husband. He accepted what she was and made her feel normal in a way she never had before. In the short time they'd been together, they'd been on the move constantly, traveling and having adventures. She still thought he was very, very strange, but he was a good husband, in his own peculiar way. What worried her was the thought of things changing with strangers joining them. She did not want other people coming between them. Alice most particularly did not want his attention wandering to any place it shouldn't.
What sort of monster is waiting for us in Middleton?
I don't know, Waldo replied as he took out Roger's wand to give it an inspection. All I know is that there are 2 more great monsters out there for me to claim, and one of them is in Middleton. Until I met you, I wasn't even sure that Ember's map was real.
Are either of them women?
I've no idea.
Could one of them be a succubus?
It's possible, I suppose.
I don't care how beautiful or willing she might be. You better remember a man only gets to have 1 wife.
In this country, maybe. I will keep that in mind. He slowly rotated the wand in his hands. There were 15 words of power carved into it, and all of them looked to be names. He hadn't seen that before. In his family, words of power tended to reflect the ambitions and desires of the caster. Death, power, strength, cruelty, and mercilessness were all good examples of what his family would use. The thought of using the names of the people who matter to you was a radical concept. With a flick of his wrist, he tossed the wand onto the fire.
What are you doing?
Wands are very personal magic items. Even if I had real skill, I doubt I would be able to get it to work for me. All magic users know how wands work, so it wouldn't even be worth trying to sell.
Then why did you steal it in the first place?
Because Roger could use it. Why would I leave someone I just robbed his wand?
Good point, she began fidgeting again. So, what will you do if it is another succubus we meet in Middleton?
I will bind her to my service with a contract, like I did with you. I will also try and make this one work properly.
Does that mean you'll kiss her?
That is part of the ritual. Alice looked at the fire. When she imagined her precious husband kissing another woman, it made her feel surprisingly sad. She didn't want anyone else to ever kiss him. Without even realizing it, she began to cry. When Waldo saw that, he quickly tore open his backpack to pull out the glass vial and stopper. In Castle Corpse Lover, Lilith stood before her bedroom mirror and watched as her son tried to capture the succubus's tears as she threatened to hit him. Lilith couldn't keep herself from laughing. "My son, you really do need to learn how to handle your women."
Chapter 24. A Day at the Office. Lilith had watched each of her children when they had gone out on their first quests. None of them had ever known. It was important they believe they were on their own. Which they were. All she could do was watch. She had seen her eldest and strongest, Roland, die with a sword through his chest. Watched as Gwendolyn had her throat cut. She had begun watching one day to see Kara's body lying stiff and abandoned on the side of the road. Her daughter had been murdered sometime in the night. Who had done it, and how, Lilith never knew. She never tried to avenge her murdered children. That was not her way. If someone died on their first quest, it was a sign they had been too weak or too careless. When she had sent Waldo off, she held hope that he would return. Despite what most people believed, Lilith had always understood that Waldo had strength in him, and a great deal of talent. Hope was not certainty, though, and she could not pretend that the odds were not set very heavy against him. She had been watching when he was thrown into the river, and had feared it was the end. Lilith thought she was about to see her last child die. Then she had witnessed the miraculous rescue by his succubus. Since then, she had been watching his actions with even greater interest. "The terrible white mage, Waldo Rabbit," she snorted with a laugh. Her son had certainly come up with some unique solutions to his problems so far. The fact he was going about disguised as a white mage would be looked down upon by the council, and others. Ideally, a dark mage was supposed to go around openly, relying on his intelligence and his magic to keep him safe. It had, however, been done before, and there was no rule against it. So as far as Lilith was concerned, her son was entitled to use whatever trick he needed to survive. The fact he had already made a contract with the succubus was a tremendous accomplishment. If this were an ordinary first quest, that by itself would have been plenty. Waldo's familiar had already proven herself extremely useful. She had saved his life, provided his meals, and helped him rob that fool of a hedge wizard. Lilith did have a few concerns about her, though. Waldo had clearly botched the binding ritual. The succubus was at liberty to refuse direct orders and even physically assault him. Normally that would mean instant disaster. Alice, though, appeared content to serve. Lilith found the fact the girl really believed herself to be his wife amusing. No matter what ceremonies Waldo performed in the outside world, he would not be married under Alturithan law, unless she gave consent. Her son was entitled to take multiple wives, and there was no stigma against taking a monster as one. If her son really wanted this girl to be his wife, Lilith would permit it. But Alice was being quite presumptuous to believe a few words spoken in a whorehouse made her the wife of the corpse lover heir. All that was for the future, though. For now, all that really mattered was that her son was not only still alive, but actually making progress. Maybe there really was hope. In the mirror, she saw her son rubbing his backside where his wife had just kicked him after collecting some of her tears. With an amused smile, Lilith waved her hand before the mirror. The image rippled and vanished, leaving her staring at her own reflection.
"Stay safe, Waldo."
The following morning, she had business with the council. Enver, as usual, preferred to stay hidden within his room. Walter had been avoiding her for the past few days. No doubt he was roaming through the castle, torturing and feeding on some of the slaves. She would leave him be until his mood improved. The only company she had before setting out were her servants. Most of them, of course, did not dare speak a word to her unless spoken to first. They bathed her, dressed her, and served her breakfast with an absolute minimum of conversation. Some of them were new, some had been in her service for years, yet none of them felt comfortable around her. Their movements were eager and swift, clearly longing to please, constantly anxious to escape her presence. They were always afraid. Lilith was happy to see that in the people around her. It was pleasing to know she inspired dread. So far as she was concerned, it was the sincerest form of respect. When her breakfast was complete and the plates and utensils were cleared away, her steward approached her. He had been serving the family for over 30 years. He had originally been in the service of her father, back when he was still flesh and blood. Hollister knew her as well as almost anyone, and had served her faithfully for the entire time she had been in power. She trusted him as much as she trusted anyone, which was not very much. Even with him, there was no familiarity. He did not presume to joke or act in a friendly manner. He was respectful and formal at all times. He never forgot that no matter how useful he might be to her, he was never anything more than a servant.
The meeting of the council is scheduled to begin in half an hour's time, mistress.
Lilith gave a slight nod. Is my escort ready? It was a pointless question. She knew they were.
It is, mistress.
He began going over the new business of the day.
We have received an invitation for a wedding to be held in Castle Wormwood in 2 months' time.
She never attended the weddings of the other houses. They were painfully tedious affairs. The others all knew that, of course, but an invitation was expected. Appearances had to be maintained. Send them my sincere regrets. Who in that brood is getting married, anyway?
Saigor Wormwood, who is the third son of Gareth, and his third wife, Ellen, is to marry Tasha Wormwood, daughter of Adam Wormwood and his wife, Natalia.
Lilith recognized none of the names. Gareth was just marrying off another of his sons to some girl in one of the branch families. If you were a member of one of the seven great families, you either married someone from your own extended family or someone from one of the other houses. That was one of the ways the great families kept exclusive control over everything. If you were not born into one of the houses, there was almost no chance of ever gaining entry. The exception was if you could use magic, in which case you could expect to be adopted into one of the seven. Lilith thought for a moment about her son and his pretty little succubus. Except for the blood drinkers, it was rare for an heir to marry a monster. The blood drinkers were obsessed with breeding, though, and followed their own traditions. It was fine for members of the main families to marry non-humans, but it was considered tradition for the designated heirs to only take human wives. She laughed to herself, just imagining the uproar it would cause among some of the more conservative families. It might be worth doing just for that. Her laughter caused Hollister to look at her questioningly. He did not, however, ask her about it.
There was a cave-in at Goldmine 6 last night. The entire workforce was likely lost. Early estimates are that it will take at least 12 months to restore production.
Lilith frowned. The loss of the workers meant nothing to her. All the mines used undead. They could stand up to the conditions far better than living men, and worked without rest. For simple physical labor like mining, the dead were always much better than the living. Work that involved any sort of judgment or skill was best left to the living. It was not even the loss of the gold production that annoyed her. She owned many other mines, and Corpse Lover was far and away the wealthiest of the seven houses. That's the mine Poison Dagger has been trying to lay claim to.
It is, mistress.
That little worm did this, Dante. He's been trying to get me to share the rights. This is his doing.
There is no proof of that, mistress.
I didn't think there would be. He is a competent little fuck.
Do you intend to respond, mistress?
One of the few drawbacks to how things worked in Alteroth was that if she did want to respond, it would mean acting on her own, and perhaps intensifying the feud between Corpse Lover and Poison Dagger. Alteroth was less a country than it was the private property of the seven great families. They were the only authority, and the law was whatever they said it was. It was meant to apply to those beneath them, not to those who ruled. When it came to disputes among the families themselves, there was no authority they could turn to. The uninvolved houses did not like to intervene, so as to keep their own freedom of action, as well as avoid making an enemy. So what wound up happening was that whenever two or more families had a dispute, they were left to solve it on their own. This tended to turn any problem into the cause for a long-simmering vendetta. The families did not war on each other openly. That would lead to civil war and complete ruin. They would instead snipe at each other from the shadows. There would be smear campaigns, thefts, destruction, sabotage, and even assassinations. Often these feuds would stretch out for years. Knowing what was scheduled later today, Lilith let a faint smile cross her face. I already know what to do. I'm going to get my pound of flesh from Poison Dagger. Hollister looked at her and raised an eyebrow. I mean that figuratively. Her steward nodded.
I would also remind you, mistress, that your cousin Andris Corpse Lover will be coming to dinner tonight.
Good. I need to talk to him about an important matter. In the courtyard, 100 armed skeletons waited. They moved in to answer her will. When the drawbridge was lowered, they shuffled out ahead of her. Undead surrounded her, matching her pace as she set off for the council's hall. The sky was the color of ash, and though it was mid-morning, it was no brighter than twilight. As always, the sun was hidden by an iron sky. As she walked, Lilith breathed in the air, ripe with a scent of fresh sulfur. You had to try and notice it. It was a constant that people grew used to and ignored. As she and her escort traveled, the people in the street very quickly cleared out of the way. Lilith saw their scurrying forms and smiled. When she arrived at the hall, the 10 skeletons nearest the front entered with her, while the rest waited where they were. Each council member was allowed to bring in 10 guards, which is what they all had agreed to. Inside, the guards from the other houses all stood apart. There was always tension when the Council of Seven came together. Suspicions were plain on every living face. Among the other guards were mages, ogres, trolls, a vampire, and a half-dragon. At the first sign of any sort of trouble, they would tear into each other without mercy. When Lilith arrived with her escort, all the others focused on her. Having only brought skeletons, her force was easily the weakest of those assembled. The eyes being directed at her were cautious, not because of her guards, but because they all knew she could summon hundreds more in an instant. Her wand was tucked into a hidden pocket, where it was in easy reach. A second was in a stocking beneath her robes. Even without bothering with a wand, she could recite the necessary spell in just seconds. One always had to be prepared. She pushed open the doors to the inner chamber, and then shut them behind her. 5 of the 7 seats at the round table were already occupied. Elven maidens were busy serving wine, and the quiet conversations were momentarily disrupted as attention was turned towards the door. Lilith noted immediately that Dante Poison Dagger was at his regular place. The despicable, shrunken old man with rotten teeth grinned at her and lifted his goblet in a mock salute. He felt safe to slight her because they were here inside the hall. To strike at him here would be to attack openly and begin a war between Corpse Lover and Poison Dagger. The day would come when blood would be spilled here in the inner chamber. Lilith was certain of it. They were all enemies. Only their fear of the outside world held them together in their tenuous alliance. There was too much hate, too much distrust, too much anger for it not to erupt one day. It would not be today, though. Lilith returned Dante's gesture with a wave and a false smile before taking her usual seat. She motioned to one of the elves, and a goblet of red wine was immediately brought to her. Lilith looked about at the faces at the table. "I see Loram is running late today. A little odd. Usually Blackwater is among the early ones."
"Are you jealous that you're not the last one to arrive for once?"
Poison Dagger asked.
"I'm willing to concede the honor from time to time," she answered.
"I heard there was an accident at one of your mines last night. Quite catastrophic, if what I'm told is right. It will take a long while to reopen. A great shame,"
Dante said.
"Your sources are surprisingly well informed. It's nothing more than a very minor inconvenience. My vault is bursting with gold and silver. It's not as if my house is short of funds. Now that would be rather sad, don't you think?"
Poison Dagger had a sour expression as he muttered,
"Certainly."
Among the 7 families, it was common knowledge that Poison Dagger was the poorest. They owned none of the mines near the forge, and the incomes from their lands and skilled workers never came close to being enough. This was because the family head had a taste for the expensive and the exquisite. His castle was filled with rare books, marble statues, paintings, pieces of art imported from all over the Shattered Lands, and only the most beautiful and delectable slaves. Dante was perpetually in search of more revenue. It was no secret that his support was always available to the highest bidder. A large reason for the hard feelings between Poison Dagger and Corpse Lover was that Lilith had never felt any need to buy him off, despite having vast sums. Lilith had never thought him worth a single copper knuckle. Dante had always resented her for that, and over the years their conflict had grown only more bitter and acrimonious. As she waited for the arrival of Loram Blackwater, Lilith listened to the side conversations going on around her. Xylas Soulbreaker was trying to convince Baldwin Blooddrinker to sell him a particular seamstress. Apparently one of Xylas's silversmiths had fallen in love with the girl and wanted to marry her. Skilled workers were valuable, and depending on who owned the mother, the children would either become smiths or textile workers. Xylas was offering 5 gold skulls for the girl, but Baldwin was demanding 20. He was, however, willing to allow the silversmith to marry her, as the children would be his property. Xylas was unwilling to agree to that. It looked like the poor silversmith was going to have to find someone else to marry. Gareth Wormwood was complaining about the harassment his merchants were suffering in Lothas and the other northern kingdoms. He felt they were treated with suspicion and forced to pay higher prices.
"They expect anyone from Ul'tarath to be a murderer or a thief."
"Shocking," Lilith said in a sympathetic tone. "Clearly those northerners don't know us at all."
"Just so."
"If they really understood us, they'd build a wall along the border and kill anyone who tried to cross it."
"It's because of those damn white mages stirring things up,"
Darius Heartless shouted, loudly adding his opinion.
"They go around everywhere spreading their lies and building their conspiracies against us.
All the suspicions we face are because of the secret plots being hatched in Avalon. We'll never be safe until every last white mage is dead."
Lilith and the others all turned annoyed faces his way. This was a very familiar refrain. Avalon was Darius's personal hate, and everything that was wrong with the world could somehow be blamed on the Misty Isle. He argued constantly that all their problems could be solved by laying waste to the island and putting every last white mage at the sharp end of a pike. Never mind that Avalon was far away and Alderaath had no shoreline. Never mind that the white mages had a massive fleet and were a great power. Never mind that openly attacking them would likely bring many nations into the conflict on Avalon's side. No one denied the white mages were a problem, or that they would have to be dealt with. It was just that they were not the sort of problem that could be solved directly. They needed to be opposed with subtlety. The best way to defeat them was to damage their credibility and reputation. When Lilith thought that, she also thought of her son and what he was up to. She smiled slightly. What a wonderful justification this would make for his going about in white.
"Oh, give up, Darius," Garth Wormwood said snidely. "You're the only one here stupid enough to talk about war with Avalon seriously."
The two men openly glared at one another. Wormwood and Heartless were in the middle of a long-running vendetta. It was the sort of blatant hostility that kept everyone on edge at every meeting.
"Did I say we should declare war on Avalon? If we can't strike at them directly, let's instead bring down one of their puppets. Let's invade and conquer Dragaal."
Five faces stared at him blankly.
"You really are an idiot," Gareth chided.
Before Darius could yell some reply, Xylas also spoke.
"War in the north would be too costly."
"I agree," Lilith added. "If we invade Dragaal, the other northern kingdoms will come in against us."
"So what? Let them. We'll crush all three and take all their lands."
Darius looked around the table, hoping for any backing.
"I think it is an interesting proposal,"
Dante said in a voice that oozed sympathy and understanding.
"We should discuss it."
Hearing someone else side with him only made Darius puff out his chest and look even more determined to push his view. Lilith sent an exasperated glance at Dante. She had spoken up in the hopes that it would be enough to end the ridiculous debate. Lilith was certain that the only reason Dante had voiced his support was because it meant opposing her. He didn't give a damn whether or not they went to war. He just wanted to inconvenience her.
"Fine, then," Xylas sighed. "Let's talk about it. Keep in mind that Loram still isn't here."
Darius came to his feet and put his shoulders back, making every effort to look imposing.
"We have a quorum, and it only takes 4 votes. The reason why we need to crush Dragaal should be obvious. While all the northern kingdoms are infested with white mages, King Doran keeps one as his closest advisor, and talks of bringing Dragaal into the alliance. He is nothing but Avalon's puppet. If we do nothing, then it will be an invitation for them to strike at us."
"You've been saying that for years now," Gareth pointed out. "We all know how much Doran loves the whites, especially his pet Ramiel.
Nothing you're telling us is new." "And yet, we have done nothing as Doran plots to sell his country to Avalon."
"He wouldn't dare," Xyla said wearily. "He knows we would never tolerate an alliance nation on our border. They know what we would do to them."
The Alliance of Mist, or more commonly just the Alliance, was a league of several countries dominated by Avalon. The member states all kept their own governments and were, in theory, independent and equal. They were, however, required to adopt the laws of Avalon, allow free and open trade to Alliance merchants, and come to the aid of any member who was attacked. In member countries, all monsters and non-humans were killed on sight. Only white mages were permitted to practice magic. Slavery was forbidden, necromancy was forbidden, and all merchants from Alderaath were denied access. The Alliance nations were far away, and except for Avalon, weak and insignificant. But the white mages could be found in every country spreading their lies and trying to seduce those in power to join them. Doran was the most obvious example, but far from the only one. "Most of the nobles distrust the whites as much as they do us," Lilith said. "They can all see that joining the Alliance means submitting to Avalon."
"Doran is an exception. He's been fooled by Ramiel's sweet lies. I tell you he intends to join."
"Fine," Gareth said. "Then when he does bring up the motion again, I will gladly choose war."
"You would have us look weak then?" Dante asked.
"No one cares about small wars," Lilith answered him. "If we invade Dragaal, then Wylef and Lothos will certainly fight. Others may decide to join as well."
"Let them," Darius said. "They are all scheming against us, plotting with Avalon to destroy us. If they want to fight us, so much the better. We'll just get rid of them all and add their lands to our own." What can their little armies do to match our power? We'll crush them all in a month.
There was some truth to that. Alteroth was much larger than all three of the northern kingdoms put together. If the seven houses put their full effort into it, they could raise armies, of living and dead soldiers, five or six times as large as what the three kingdoms could. Defeating the knights and their levies, though, was not the main concern.
"What happens when we face an alliance army with 100 white mages leading them?" Gareth asked. "Why do you think I want to attack Dragaal in the first place? It's so we can draw out the whites, and bring them where we can actually deal with them."
He looked around the table.
"You say it's impossible to attack Avalon? Fine, then. Let's force them to come to us. Let them send 100 white mages. Let them send 1,000. Once we destroy them in battle, that will be the end of the alliance and all of their plots. No one will dare join them after that. Even if we can never invade Avalon, their power will be broken."
"Or ours will," Gareth said quietly.
Darius glared at him.
"You doubt our strength?"
"No. I wonder about Avalon's. Their mages are as skilled as ours, and even if they lack monsters and undead, their armies are not to be despised. Their knights are the finest warriors in the Shattered Lands, and fearless. They also have something we don't. Allies."
Now Gareth too stood up, so that both he and Darius were on their feet, staring one another down.
"The entire world hates us, and no matter how strong we are, we will never be strong enough to fight them all. We prosper, we survive for only two reasons. Because they are divided and because they fear us. Should they ever lose their fear, or should they ever unite, we are doomed. What you are suggesting will cause our enemies to unite against us behind Avalon's banner. Can you not see that, you loud-mouthed fool?"
Darius's face turned even redder than it already was.
"They are already doing that! Every day their influence grows stronger. They are turning all the countries against us. If we do nothing, we'll find ourselves surrounded by armies of knights and white mages. The only answer is to attack now, before it's too late.
And start a war that may destroy us? The whites have to be annihilated. There is no other course."
"There is a third choice," Lilith said in a soft voice, as she knew they would. All eyes turned in her direction. "Instead of attacking them directly, why don't we attack their reputations? Lies can be even more effective weapons than swords. They thrive by making people see them as just and heroic. Strip that away and people will see them for what they truly are. Power-hungry extremists. That would be enough to destroy their efforts without risking such a dangerous war." Darius and Dante frowned at her proposal. The others appeared interested. Before Darius could rail against the suggestion, they were interrupted. The doors to the inner chamber were opened by a man in black robes. They all turned towards the door, expecting to see their last member. He had the familiar curly black hair and cleft chin of Lorem Blackwater, but his face was much newer and unfamiliar to them.
"Who are you?" Darius demanded. "You're interrupting a meeting of the Council of Seven."
The young man smiled confidently and entered.
"I am Tiberius Blackwater, second son of Lorem Blackwater and his third wife, Amyla. It grieves me to have to announce the tragic passing of my beloved father. As his heir, I claim leadership of the Blackwater family and its place upon the Council of Seven. I ask you to acknowledge me."
Lorem must have let his guard down and become sloppy, Lilith thought. He had been in perfect health at the last meeting.
"You're not the heir," Xylas pointed out. "His son Faris from his first wife is.
Sadly, my brother Faris suffered a tragic accident, as did a few others."
"Oh-ho, this one bears watching," Lilith thought. Within the seven families, it was not unusual for the head of the household to suffer an accident. It was accepted that there was no place for the weak, and that the strong were entitled to take what they could, which only made Dante's continued survival all the more infuriating. What was unusual was for anyone but the designated heir to arrange that sort of accident. If this Tiberius had managed to eliminate not only his father, but all his rivals in one fell swoop, he was clearly someone with great ability and an iron nerve.
"You might at least pretend to be sorry your father and brothers are gone," Gareth said in obvious annoyance.
He and Lorem had gotten along fairly well.
"There is such a thing as civility, you know."
"I apologize." Immediately Tiberius's face became a comic extreme of sadness, with downturned mouth and lips quivering.
"Is this better?"
Dante snorted a laugh while Gareth's eyes narrowed.
"Be careful, boy. You don't want to make an enemy of me."
I should hate to make an enemy of any of you. I hope we can all be the best of friends. He came to a halt before the only empty chair at the table. Before I take my seat, I would like to be formally acknowledged by the council. That is only proper, after all. This was normally just a formality. When someone seized control of one of the families, the others usually just accepted it. Darius took them all by surprise by being the first one to speak and actually managing not to sound in a rage for once.
I acknowledge you as a member of the council and as head of the Blackwater family. I sincerely welcome you and hope we can work well together.
I thank you for the warm welcome, Darius Heartless. I wish for the same.
I acknowledge you as a member of the council and as head of the Blackwater family,
Dante said quickly, making sure he was second. I acknowledge you as a member of the council and as head of the Blackwater family, Lilith said.
I acknowledge you as a member of the council and as head of the Blackwater family, Baldwin said.
I acknowledge you as a member of the council and as head of the Blackwater family, Xylas said.
I acknowledge you, Gareth said.
With that, Tiberius Blackwater was a member of the Council of Seven. He gave Gareth a nod before pulling out his father's chair and sitting down in it. It feels comfortable.
It might not always, Gareth said.
Well, this has been interesting, Dante Poison Dagger said. However, let us get to the actual reason for our meeting.
Chapter 25. Punishment is its own reward. Dante motioned to one of the elven servants.
Have my grandson brought in.
Yes, master,
the girl said with an obedient bow. She then hurried out of the chamber. All of the earlier events had certainly been entertaining, but the original reason they had been called together was for a simple confirmation. As they waited, Lilith noted that Darius had given up trying to continue the debate for war. That was unusual. Normally he would press his argument until the council either told him to shut up, or they actually went through the trouble of voting him down. Seeing Darius be reasonable for once was both a relief and a bit worrisome. He was making polite conversation with Tiberius and, amazingly, doing so in a civil manner. It was all too obvious what Darius was playing at. Lorem Blackwater had been an associate of Gareth's, and had steadily opposed all of Heartless's efforts. He was clearly trying to bring Tiberius into his camp. It took a few minutes before a young man in black robes strode in. He was of average height and weight, with horsey teeth. Standing before them, he bowed.
I am Nunca Poisondagger, and I have come in answer to the summons of the Council of Seven.
There was a sheen of sweat on his forehead. Despite trying to look calm, his eyes darted about. Lilith saw them come to rest on her. Seeing exactly where his eyes were going, she deliberately leaned forward a bit while sitting on her robes.
We have summoned you to confirm you have completed your first quest.
Dante pointed to a spot on the other side of the table.
Stand within the circle of truth and answer all questions put to you by the Council of Seven. I warn you, to speak only the truth.
The young dark mage immediately walked around the table to the far side of the room. There, etched into the stone floor, was a circle. Surrounding it was a complex formula of runes and magical symbols. As soon as he stepped inside, the markings, as well as the circle itself, began to glow with a murky bluish-white light. Whenever someone was brought here to deliver a report, be questioned, or to be tried, they were made to stand within the circle. The enchantment carved into the floor did not actually compel anyone to speak the truth. Rather, it inflicted pain on those who spoke any sort of falsehood while inside its confines. The council had discovered long ago that truth spells that forced subjects to speak could be defeated simply by making irrelevant statements that just happened to be true. It also tended to cause its subjects to resist and reveal as little useful information as possible. By comparison, this method permitted a person to lie, but the lies were obvious and were instantly punished, whereas speaking the truth was rewarded. It encouraged subjects to be more revealing. Once he was inside the circle and the carvings were glowing at his feet, Nunca tried very hard to appear calm, but the way his eyes kept darting to the floor gave his true feelings away.
There is no need to be nervous, grandson,
Dante said in a soothing tone.
Confirmations are routine and nothing to be feared. Simply speak the truth. You'll only suffer if you lie. Each member shall ask one question. All you need do is answer truthfully. Should you lie, we will know and the council member will be free to ask an additional question. Once you have answered seven questions, you will be a true dark mage of Alderaath. Do you understand?
Yes,
Nunca said with only a slight shake to his voice. Nodding, Dante looked about the table, inviting someone to be first.
All council members were equals, and no one was permitted to act as leader. The questions would be asked in no particular